The Fugitive. A QM production. Starring David Janssen as Dr. Richard Kimball, an innocent victim of blind justice, falsely convicted for the murder of his wife.
It's a new year, but it's the same old story. Hi, everybody. Talking Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby and Ken. And Imwa filling in here as I'm sort of like Boris Karloff, who used to host Thriller. I'd just come on, or Alfred Hitchcock, you know, and provide a little banter. Anyway, a first edition of 2007. If you want to, it's as usual, be on the program. The phone number is 800-407 KSAV. You can email, if you wish, during the program, talk at KSAV.org, and any other time, fugitive at KSAV.org. All right, picking up this year where we left off last year, let's start off with Bobby Neer. Happy New Year, Bob.
Same to you, Dave. Thank you. Episode number 8 of Season 1 of The Fugitive, See Hollywood and Die, is why we are gathered here this evening. And this particular episode is a favorite of mine, and as it turns out, a favorite of a lot of people. In our viewer poll for this episode several years ago, of the 21 or 22 people who voted, about 13 of them either gave it an 8, a 9, or a 10. So that's kind of unusual, and it is not normally considered a classic episode, but you got to pay attention to numbers like that. I know that I gave it a 10, and Kitty gave it a 10, and Ken gave it an 8. So that's pretty good. This particular episode, as it does, comes early in the series. We don't really know Richard Kimball all that well. We haven't seen him in a lot of situations. So far, we saw in the pilot episode, he had to deal with Ed Wells, a psychotic character. And since then, in the episodes that came between that one and this one, he fell in love, of course, with Karen and never waved goodbye. And he saved some people in a forest fire and delivered a baby and several other things, but he did not have to deal with any psychotic characters like he does constantly in this series. As See Hollywood and Die opens up, there's a very unusual scene at the beginning. As the credits are rolling up at the start, Kimball is working in a gas station, one of his usual menial jobs. He's underneath a car, he's fixing a car. And a police car pulls into the gas station. And it's most unusual because normally, if Kimball sees a police car or a cop or anybody anywhere, he immediately looks guilty, he immediately gets nervous, he has all kinds of nervous tics, and he looks like he's killed somebody, frankly. In this particular instance, though, he not only doesn't seem to be fazed at all by the fact that there's a cop on the property, he even waves at him. So it appears, to me at least, at the beginning of this story, that for once he's managed to find a place where he feels secure, where nobody's after him, nobody knows who he is. If he can, you know, hobnob with the police, then he may have found the one place that he can stay without having to be threatened at all. So that's a very unusual moment in this particular series. But, of course, Richard Kimball can't get a break from the writers, who always have to put him in jeopardy no matter what, no matter how good it may look. And so he's getting ready to close down the gas station with the elderly man who owns it. And two customers come in right as he's getting ready to close. They drive in to get gas. And those are two low-life punks named Miles and Vinny, who happen to be two guys who are simply looking for trouble. They're not really there to get gas. They're there to hold up the gas station. And one of them, Vinny, goes into the station itself to rob the old man. Miles stays outside and lets Kimball put the gas in the car in the days when gas station attendants actually did that for you. And all of a sudden, things go really, really bad. And Miles ends up pulling a gun on Kimball out by the pump. The robbery is proceeding inside. And to make matters worse, another customer pulls up, a woman in a car, looking for a map. In the days when you could go to a gas station and actually get a map. You didn't do that anymore either. And her name is Joanne Spencer. And things go really, really bad. The cop shows up again, and they're in the middle of the robbery. The cop sees that something's going on, and there's there's a trouble. Miles and Vinny take Kimball and Jolene Spencer hostage in the car, and on the way out, when the gas station owner is calling through the cop that he's in trouble, Miles simply takes a gun, points it out the window, and kills him on the spot. There's no real reason for this. He's not really threatened in any way. What this does is set Miles up as one of the worst characters, most psychotic characters that we've met in the series so far. And we talked about him several weeks ago when we did Favorite Villains of Season 1. Miles is one of the worst, one of the scariest. Both of them take Kimball and Jolene Spencer hostage in the car. But what is really amazing about this this whole setup at the beginning is very exciting, and I enjoy it a lot. But what we're about to see is a Richard Kimball that we don't normally know. Throughout this ordeal at the beginning, he's incredibly cool. Nothing seems to be bothering him at all. He's going along with it. They put him in the back seat. They make Joanne drive the car. Vinny's in there waving the gun around, pointing it at everybody, threatening to blow everybody's head off. And Kimball's in the back seat, and he seems to be not the least bit fazed by anything. So what we have here is that Kimball, who normally is very resourceful in finding ways out of trouble, except this time he literally has to reinvent himself. He has to buy time because things look really, really bad. And he has to convince Miles and Vinny that he's not just an innocent victim in this thing, that he himself is a criminal, and that they pulled into the gas station just moments before he was planning to rob it himself. Now, that's pretty strange for Richard Kimball, who's always portrayed as above board, never would commit a crime, never would do anything. He does it very well. Of course, Vinny and Miles are incredibly stupid, so they would probably buy into any of this anyway, but Kimball does a really, really good job of this. I want to ask Ken, what about Kimball as criminal? Do you buy it? Do you think that this is believable?
Yes, I do. I thought this is a very interesting story early on in the series. You know, I like the way you set it up, where, you know, the first couple episodes, we see a nice Kimball. You know, he saved right. Monica. He loves Karen. He helped out Cassie some of those episodes.
Right.
And, yeah, he delivers a baby, so he's a nice Richard Kimball. But in this episode, you know, he had the advantage over these little thugs in the car, really. These thugs are in their 20s, and Kimball is in his 30s. So in one way, he's older, and the thugs can see that. But I like the way the story was written, that right away we see a smart Richard Kimball, you know. And then I think it really helped the series out in that first season because, you know, are we seeing a Richard Kimball who's a hero? Or are we seeing a many-sided kind of a Richard Kimball? And you know what? He's not a dumb fugitive. This is a doctor. He's a smart guy. And so I remember watching this episode, and it was really smart of Kimball right away. Within a few moments, you know, he acted like MacGyver, really. He thought up of this brilliant idea that, you know, he has a partner, and he has ways of getting more money, and you know what? These punks, they fell for it. And I'm wondering, you know, I wanted to ask you, Bob, and also Kitty, you think Kimball maybe learned something from maybe when he was in prison? Remember after his conviction? He must have spent a little time in prison. Maybe he talked to some other criminals. So then when he ran into these guys...
I think it's very possible, you know, in fact, it's highly likely that he was rubbing elbows with the real criminal element. You know, I mean, everybody in prison likes to say they're innocent, but, you know, how innocent are they really? And so, yeah, I'm sure he conversed with quite a few people in prison. It actually might have been interesting if we could have seen a show where it was a flashback of seeing him in prison with somebody. But yeah, I liked him in this episode. I thought it was definitely a different face for him to put on to pretend to be a bad guy, without a doubt. And I might also add that this was the very first episode I ever saw of The Fugitive. I saw it when I was a little kid, and I didn't understand initially that Richard Kimball was actually a good guy. I was wondering why we were watching this show.
Uh-huh.
Well, actually, when he's in the car with them in the back, he tells them that it's too bad that they came into the gas station when they did, because he was just about ready to rob the old man himself, that there was $500 or something like that underneath the cash drawer. This is really thinking fast on your feet. Now, you know, I mean, in the series, you'll automatically assume, I think, that you really can't stay free unless you can think quickly on your feet. When you think of all the episodes in which Kimball is stopped by the police or stopped by anybody, he's asked questions, who are you, where do you come from, where did you work, who did you work for, and then, of course, there's all those times in which he performs medical miracles, and people look at him and go, how do you know how to do that? And right away he goes, oh, I was a medic in Korea. He has an answer for everything, which I would assume if you're on the run like that, you better have an answer for everything, or you're in a lot of trouble. But in this particular episode, I mean, when we talk about Acts 3 and 4 a couple of weeks from now, I mean, he even gets better. I mean, as it goes along, he's getting better and better and better. What I'm not only impressed by his ability to think quickly here is he's the essence of cool in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's not fazed by anything. Anybody else would be in a complete panic. Oh, my God, I'm being kidnapped. These guys are going to kill me. What am I going to do? Should I jump out of the car? He sits there, and it's just like nothing. It's just like, okay. So I got this lunatic pointing a gun at me and going, pow, pow, pow. Doesn't matter. That's all right. I'll figure out a way. Figure out how to do something.
You know,
we really don't even, you did not see any episodes before this, but even those of us who did, I mean, his character, like Ken said, is kind of established as being always helpful and everything, and can he really turn it around and convince anybody? And the only thing here I would say is Miles and Vinny are galactically stupid. I mean, they're just incredibly dumb. So you could, you know, I could pretend to be a criminal and they'd probably buy it. But I think it is, it's quietly convincing. And it's kind of interesting to see Richard Kimball and David Jansen act that way and be able to convince him of this. Now, you mentioned about him being in prison. Did he learn anything? And this is another case in which it's kind of a shame, I think, that we didn't get to see his early days when he was in prison
yeah.
for however long it was until he escaped. What was he like in prison? Did he also help other prisoners? Was he a model prisoner? Things like that. I think, Ken, you're right. I mean, we don't really know, but we would automatically assume that he must have learned something, including how to get along with guys who really have done something bad.
You know, a key thing that he brought up right away with these guys, you know, a natural reaction would be to jump them, I think.
Yeah.
If I was in the situation, you got to jump them.
Right.
But he was cool and collected, and the main thing he said was, hey, guys, I know how to get more money, and the thugs brought it. You know, he said something like, what, $150,000 or something? It was waiting
for him.
Yeah,
he's going to meet a partner, and he's got a big score coming up, yeah.
That was brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, and Miles and Vinny not only buy into that story, but they also buy into the fact that he would be willing to share it with them. How likely is it if you had really, if this was true, and that he was really going for a big amount of money with a partner, that he would want anything to do with these two lowlifes, that he would in a million years agree to share any money with them. So, you know, they really are incredibly stupid to buy into any of that. But this is really, really quick thinking on your feet. And by the way, when he's sitting in the back of a car, I think it's Vinny who hits him, too. He clobbers him, hits him in the face, and he just, you know, Kimball just turns to the side as if to say, oh, you know, I'm a tough guy. You can hit me, you can do whatever you want to do, and it's just, it's not going to bother me in the least. And that's quite unusual, and it's just, even though we've only seen him for seven episodes before this, it still seems quite striking.
All right, let's take a quick time out, because
okay.
This will give people a chance to do something else that in the old days you could do at a gas station as well. Use the restroom.
That's true.
All right, I wonder if you were going to include that. We'll be back. Quick time out, 1 minute break, and we will return to talk a little more Fugitive here on Retro Radio.
Hear the music you love from the past, all the memories you cherish will last. Listen and you'll agree, it's the place you wanna be, it's KSAV. Never far away, at work or at play, of KSAP. Listen to us, we know you'll agree. It's the place you want to be for songs that fill the day. It's KSAP. Stay with KSAP.
All right, hitting the open road, a gas station here, a map there. We're talking Fugitive on the Talking Fugitive with Kitty and the rest of the gang out there. All right, for part two of tonight's episode, Bob, you take it away once again.
Okay, if I can just digress for a moment here, I'd like to remind everybody that our two books, the Fugitive Views and Reviews, Volume 1 and Volume 2, are, of course, available at Amazon.com. and BarnesandNoble.com. They're absolutely brilliant. You don't want to miss them. And I'd also like to say that Kitty had a fan fiction story which ran in there on our message board over Christmas week. It was highly successful and very good. It can be found on the message board if nobody has read it so far. It is titled For Better, For Worse. Features all kinds of flashbacks and scenes that you would never imagine that you would see in The Fugitive. It's very inventive, very interesting. And it also will be permanently archived in our file section at the group. So it will always be there. And it was a great story. What do you think, Ken? Pretty good, wasn't it?
Well, tell people what the name of the group there and how they can get to that.
The Fugitive Views and Reviews.
Yeah, okay.
It's a Yahoo discussion group.
Well, thank you, Bob.
Ken, what did you think of that story? It was pretty good, wasn't it?
Yeah, I like the flashback with Helen. Little early days there, that would have been nice to see in the series. They could have done away with Storm Center and Garden House and all those soap operas.
That's the good thing about doing fan fiction. You can take it into areas they didn't do.
I like the kissing scene, Kitty. That was very sweet. The little kiss that Richard was planning on Helen.
Well, I think I had him kiss her a few times. Which one are you referring to?
I would have liked to have seen that, Helen and Richard kissing. We never saw it, did we? They were just arguing, and then she was on the floor dead.
That's right. That's right. And that's the only bad part about fan fiction is if you really like it, you think to yourself, I really want to see this play out in front of me. That's the only thing. But it was a great story, and thanks very much, Kitty, for creating that.
Well,
very good.
Thank you both.
Okay, back to See Hollywood and Die, which is not sweet in any respect at all. Nobody kisses anybody.
Well, no, actually they do, but it's not an enjoyable
film. I know what you're talking about, right? So they're traveling in the car, and Kimball has got his little plan in effect here, and he's trying to convince them that he's a big-time criminal, going for a big score, and they're just in the way. These two idiots are simply in the way. One of my other favorite part of this episode is the performance by Chris Robinson as Miles. I mean, personally, I like psychos in stories. I think they're the most interesting characters. When they're done right, they're really scary, they're compelling. You can't take your eyes off the screen. They can really scare the hell out of you. And Miles is particularly bad because he's completely out of control. This is not even about money. He doesn't even care about money. He simply wants to kill. He thinks it's fun. It's sport. He's out hunting. And he sits in the car in the front seat waving this gun around. He could have blown anybody's head off at any time. And he's making noises, points the gun right at Joey Spencer and goes, pow! Like he's going to... I mean, how do you know that he's not really going to do it? So this is a great performance. And he does very well here because if you take this too far, in my opinion, you almost get to be a parody after a while. It becomes laughable. So you got to be real careful when you're portraying a psychotic character this way. He goes right up to the edge of the cliff and he stops right there before we look at it and go, come on now, this guy's too off the wall to be taken seriously. So I really like this performance. Kitty, the actor here, you know him from the past, from a soap opera, right?
Yeah, precisely. I mean, this obviously he did this show when he was significantly younger because this was back in the 60s, but in the later 70s, he was on the soap opera General Hospital for several years, and he played a character named Dr. Rick Weber, and he was not actually the first actor to play that part. He took that role over from another actor, but in time, you really came to forget that original actor. He really made that that character his own. And, you know, and I always enjoyed him on that show. I mean, obviously, he was playing a much different character. He was actually playing a good guy on
right.
that show.
Right. I don't know him. This is the only time I've ever seen him. And I know when I did Fusion Trivia, I mean, his career kind of just faded out after that for some reason. But, I mean, I like the performance here because he has no redeeming qualities at all. He simply, when they pull him out of the gas station, for instance, he shoots the owner of the gas station. For what reason? He isn't any threat to him at all. He simply doesn't. He seems to be having far too much fun doing it. So they're traveling in the car, and Kimball is doing very well in his new persona here. He's even got me convinced that maybe he's a criminal. And the first thing they have to do is get a different car. So they pull into a used car lot, and here we go again with Kimball again. They have to get a car, and if you remember, you know, Kimball gets out of the car, and he acts, he's got kind of a smart-ass attitude with the used car salesman, who's obviously not exactly honest, and the used car salesman tells him they look at a car, and it's only got a few miles on it, and Kimball goes, yeah, sure, and he really this goes back to what Ken said. I mean, he's a doctor, but it looks like he's really been around. He knows what he's doing. He's street smart. What do you think, Ken, about that scene in the car lot?
I like it. Wasn't there a part there that he's getting ready to buy the car? So Kimball comes up with this idea of pulling the wire on
right.
the brake light or whatever it was. And right away, you know, when I looked at it again recently, and I went to our book and read all the reviews, I said, you know what, MacGyver would do the same thing.
Right.
And but then I kind of asked the question, Kimball, if the brake light's not working and you get stopped by a cop, aren't you afraid of the cops? So in one sense, I'm wondering why he would pull that wire there. What do you think, Kitty?
Oh, I think his attitude is he'd rather take his chances with the cops than with these two psychotics, because it's very apparent early on that when these two are, you know, I mean, the reason he concocts the story is because it's obvious very early on that as soon as these two guys are finished with him and Joanne, they're as good as dead, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So he's gotta come up with something. And, you know, and I think he's also going with the idea that if they were stopped by the police, it's Miles and Vinny who have the guns, and, you know, and Joanne could certainly vouch that Kimball was just as much a victim as she was, so, you know, that what are the chances, really, of these cops, of a cop stopping them, you know, recognizing Kimball? I mean, the only cop in America we've established that knows who Kimball is Gerard. Every other cop doesn't seem to care.
There's only one problem with this scene in the used car lot, and that is the fact that Richard Kimball, who can't catch a break no matter what he does, gets the only honest used car salesman in the country, who notices that the light's not working and stops them on the way out and says, "The light's not working, let me fix the light." Now, how likely is that if you went into a used car lot?
Uh-huh.
That if the light didn't work, the guy would practically stop you from driving away. Oh, don't drive away. The light's not working.
Uh-huh.
We got to take care of that. So, poor Richard Kimball. He can't get a break no matter what he does. It never quite seems to work out for him. I love the way, in the writing of this series, in order to maintain interest in the story, Richard Kimball has got to be the most put-upon character in the history of fiction. I mean, everything that can possibly go wrong for him goes wrong. People show up at the wrong time. It's endless, and he takes it with a lot of good humor. He just, you know, he goes through his daily life. But when you talk about a character having problems and a bad sense of timing, he's got the biggest problem of them all. This goes on all the time. And Kitty, you had mentioned the kissing scene in this episode, which is hardly a kissing scene. I know what you're talking about when we're talking about it in 2 weeks, but also when they go in the used car lot and Miles stays behind, he tries to sexually assault Joanne. You remember that?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't know. Was he really trying
seat?
To assault her? I mean, it you know, because initially it's, you know, we see him, he's trying to kiss her. You know, is it really getting that far?
Well, we can't tell because they're in the front. They're in the seat. They're in the front seat, and I think the shot is from the outside, sort of in the dark. And all we can see is, you know, her pushing him away. Whether he's trying to do anything beyond that, I'm not so sure. But he clearly has something on his mind. And again, it's the same thing. Kimmel comes back. He comes back with Vinny, and Kimmel sees what's going on. And instead of, you know, taking the guy and clobbering him because of what he's doing, he just kind of talks his way out of it. Remember that, Ken?
Yeah, I liked that line because he looked at Miles and he says, well, maybe she's got good taste. Yeah, I thought that was a great line.
Yeah. I think all the characters involved, what do you have? You have four characters here, right? You have Miles, Vinny, Joanne, and
right.
Kimball.
Right.
And all of them are very convincing, and they're all really playing their parts very well. You notice Brenda, in this episode, does not smile once.
No.
She has a frightening look on her face, basically, by the time of the gas station, all the way through the end. Miles, he's wild. Vinny has that sober look. And then Kimball has that unique look on his face, too. I don't think he smiles in this episode at all.
Not that I can remember.
And
he has kind of a smirk on his face when he's talking to the used car salesman.
But the only thing I, you know, if these thugs are going to believe that Kimball is really a criminal, look at Kimball. His hair is very nicely combed. He's clean shaven.
Well, actually, weren't they clean cut too?
Yeah, I'm looking at the picture right now on the website. You're right, kiddies. They all have a nicely combed hair, and Brenda looks gorgeous.
Brenda the character kind of does underplays this part. You know, she could have gone down the typical road of just being the woman who's being victimized and screaming in the car and acting out of control, but she really doesn't do that. Now, I don't know how realistic that is, but it's kind of an unusual way of portraying this because she's just sitting there, and Ken's right. I mean, she's got this terrified look on her face, but she's not really having any outward emotion. So between the two of them, between Kimball and between him and Joanne Spencer, they're probably doing the right thing. They're keeping a bad situation just barely under control because you've got somebody in the car who's a complete lunatic, and if you overreact to him, he's probably going to overreact back to you.
All right, you guys should wrap up here. Got about a minute or so.
All right, well, in 2 weeks we'll be back with Acts 3 and 4 of this. I just want to say before we wrap this up today that right after this, they need to dump the car they are using when they change cars, and they go they pull over to just a strange house on the street, and they break into the garage to ditch their old car, and Richard Kimball actually uses a crowbar to break into the garage. He actually commits a crime. I mean, how unusual is that? He doesn't normally do that. He actually commits a crime in order to play along with them, so this is a completely different Richard Kimball than we normally see.
It's too bad we actually didn't see this side of him a little more often in the series, because we've certainly seen some episodes where you wonder just what was he thinking.
All right. And I thank you guys for another interesting discussion. Everybody in this episode looked good, except the gas station owner. He wasn't looking real good. You guys, I'll see you in 2 weeks. In 1 hour tonight, we're going to be talking about programs that seemed to get off to a good start and then went 13 and out. And you had a suggestion that we're going to talk about. Bob, what program is that?
Well, The Fugitive.
The Fugitive. What else? Okay. Help everybody else stick around in 1 hour talking television with Dave White. We'll start. It's New Year as well, so you stay and enjoy the evening on Sheravision Radio.